the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey 21, the conclusion of Tim Pratt's Dream Engine on the Journey Into podcast. I am your guide, Marshall Latham, coming to you from Base Camp in Turner, Oregon. Before we get started today, I do need to make a few corrections. First of all, in the side trip we took over the Thanksgiving holiday with my story, Pardon, I indicated that Brian Lincoln, who produced the story, had won the Hugo Award. Well, my lips spoke faster than my brain there, because Brian won a Parsec Award for his Full Cast podcast, not the Hugo Award. At least not yet. I also mispronounced a couple of the voice actors. It was Coltrane from the EIE Guild who played Mashed and the President, and it was simply Ede who played one of the men. One more correction, or rather an omission, from Journey 20, Part 1 of Dream Engine. I forgot to credit Brian Lincoln, again, who was the voice for the Fat Man. I'm sorry, Brian. I have loads of respect for you. Trust me, it's nothing personal, I promise. Well, I am really excited to get to our journey at hand, so let's get to it. Once again, Tim Pratt has written many books, including his Marla Mason series, and also many short stories, many of which have been podcasted. Now, I don't know if there's any award for the most podcasted author, but Tim would definitely be a top contender, especially if you excluded authors who podcast their own work. But anyway, it's time to come with me and journey into the world of the Fat Man. And into the Dream Engine. Previously on Dream Engine.
The Nex. This is the place where I live. Nexington on Axis is the proper name. My associate, Hala Moore, calls it the Cage. The day the Fat Man began his killing spree, I saw a messenger approach through the cratered street. Hala, I said. Wake! A messenger approaches!
Shush it, Wisp!
Hala said. Hala picked up a piece of half-eaten globe fruit and hurled it at me. It passed through me without effect, of course. The messenger has a red plume, skin shifter!
Ah! Blood business, then.
Hala threw off furs and stretched, arms growing more joints and bends as he moved, unfolding like origami in flesh. I have no body, and am filled with wonder at Hala's mastery of physical form. Hala settled into the form of a male Nagalinda.
He's a fat human, with no shirt on, carrying a giant battle axe, and he chopped up a brace of beetle boys armed with dung muskets.
So the messenger reports, I said.
Perhaps the regent made it all up, and plans to execute me when I arrive. Would you tell me, Little Wisp, if that were his plan?
Hala imagines I have a closer relationship with the regent than I do. Hala does not know I am bound to community service for my past crimes, just as Hala is. The buildings were mostly brute and functional, taken from the worst parts of the thousand worlds that grind around and above Nexington on Axis. We live in the pivot, and all times and places turn past us eventually, and we residents of the Axe grab what we can from those worlds in the moment of their passing, and so our city grows and our government prospers. It is kleptocracy on a grand scale. But sometimes we grasp too hastily, and we take things we didn't want after all. Solving such problems is Hala's job. As we neared the edge of the plaza, there was a great crack and whoosh, and a wind whipped through the square. A naked man appeared in the center of the square. He appeared human, about 6 feet tall, bare-chested, and obese. He held an absurd sword in his right hand. He reared back and swung the sword, striking a Marrow woman. The square plunged into chaos.
The reports were accurate after all. I'll go sort this.
I do not condone this.
I don't care.
Hela strode into the still flurrying mass of people. Hela ducked under the man's wild swings and reached up with a long arm to grab the man's wrist. The fat man shook his arm as if to displace a biting fly. Hela flew through the air and struck a red and white striped crypt head first. The fat man caught sight of the messenger and sauntered over. Behind the fat man, Hela rose, rippled, and transformed, taking on their most fearsome shape, a Rendigo. Hela leapt at the fat man, landing on his back with unimaginable force. The fat man swiveled at the waist and flung Hela off his back, raising his sword over the messenger. His sword passed through me and cleaved the messenger nearly in two. The fat man smiled, looking at his work, then frowned and blinked. His body flickered, becoming transparent in places, and he moaned before disappearing. Before we entered the palace, Hela took on one of their common working shapes, that of a human woman. We reached the underground heart of the palace, where the regent stood at a railing looking down into the great pit that held the royal snatch engines. The royal orphans scuttled along the catwalks, their bodies feathered and insect-like, scaled and horned, multi-legged, some winged, all of them chittering and squeaking to one another. The orphans all had the inherent ability to steal things from passing worlds, but the engines augmented their powers by many orders of magnitude.
I understand you attempted to stop the killer on your way here,
the regent said.
That was profoundly stupid. You should have come to me first. I have something that might help you.
The regent then snapped his fingers. One of the royal orphans scrambled up to the railing, carrying a smoked glass vial in one tiny hand.
This is the blood of a questing beast.
Questing beasts were near legendary apex predators, the only creatures able to hunt extra-dimensional creatures.
Wherever the killer disappears to, you'll be able to follow him. Take this.
He passed Hela a misshapen sapphire.
If any civil servant sees the killer, they will notify you through this.
Let's go, Wisp. On with the hunt.
The next morning, we went to a den of vile iniquity near the palace. After a morning of Hela's hard drinking, the sing charm the regent had given us began to sound.
Off we go,
Hela said, and rushed into the street. Transforming into the questing beast, we traveled. Seconds later, we were in the middle of the landlocked sea. The sea market nearby was in chaos. Fishermen and hunters of various species, running wildly for boats and bridges, or diving into the water to get away from the fat man, who was now armed with a golden trident. He speared people, laughing, and Hela went for him and grappled. The fat man stumbled, staggered, and fell to his knees. Then the man vanished, and Hela with him, and I was pulled along in their wake, on my way to wherever the fat man went when he wasn't killing residents of the Axe for sport.
And now, the conclusion.
For a moment, I looked down on the Axe, which spun as sedately as a gear in a great machine. And other universes flashed past, their edges blue and red, shifting as they went by at tremendous speeds, briefly touching the Axe, sparks flying at the contact, the royal snatch engines making their cross-dimensional depredations. Then we plummeted into an oncoming blur of blue, green, white, and after a period of blackness, I found myself in another world.
Wisp,
Hela hissed as I came back into focus. I had never been unconscious before. Even my sleep is just a blessed respite from sensory input, not a loss of consciousness. And I did not like the sensation. Our passage from the Axe to this other plane had agitated my particles so severely that I'd lost cohesion and, thus, awareness. Now that my faculties were in control of me again, I saw a star-flecked night sky above, and Hela in human female form, crouching by bushes beside a brick wall. I did not see the fat man anywhere. What? I began.
Quiet,
Hela whispered, looking around nervously. I looked, but saw nothing to worry about. grass, flower beds, and beside us, a single-story brick house of a sort sometimes seen in the blander sections of the middling residential district.
The fat man got away,
Hal Law said.
Only he actually melted away, or misted away, or my tentacles didn't slip. He didn't slip through them, he just disappeared. Nothing can escape a questing beast.
Perhaps the legends exaggerate the beast's powers, I said.
Perhaps you'd best shush it and listen, Wisp. There's an open window just over there, and I can almost hear...
I did not have to settle for almost. I floated above the bushes a few feet to the window, which opened onto a bedroom occupied by two humans, neither of them the fat man. The man and woman were both in bed, illuminated by a single bedside lamp. The man, who was pigeon-chested and had thinning hair, gestured excitedly, and the woman, an exhausted-looking blonde, lay propped on one elbow, looking at him through half-closed eyelids. I listened, and because Hal Law is, I grudgingly admit, better at data analysis than I am, I let Xur listen too, by extending a portion of my attenuated substance down towards him, a probing presence that Hal Law sensed and accepted. My vision blurred, and sounds took on strange echoes, but then I found my focus and stopped picking up residuals of Hal Law's sensory input. But Z would see and hear everything as clearly as I did.
It's amazing,
the man was saying.
They get more real all the time. I know you think it's stupid, but lucid dreaming is amazing. I'm so glad I took that seminar. It's like living a whole other life while I'm asleep.
What did you do this time?
She leaned back and closed her eyes. The man hesitated.
I was in sort of a fish market. There were fish people, mermaids, selkies, things like that. And ordinary people, too, all buying and selling things. There was a lake or in an inland sea, and we were all on a wooden platform floating on the water.
You get seasick just stepping over a puddle,
she said. He looked at her, mouth a tense line, eyes narrowed, and I think if she had seen his expression, she would have leapt from the bed in fear for her life. Unless long association with this man had dulled her awareness to the dark currents in him I saw so clearly.
My dream body doesn't get sick. It's part of my positive visualization technique. My dream body is impervious to harm.
And I bet you look like a movie star, too.
Another hesitation. This one accompanied by a troubled frown.
Something like that.
I wondered what his dream self really looked like. His father? An old enemy? A figure from a childhood nightmare that he could not escape, but was eventually able to embody? He continued.
Only problem is, I can't seem to control where I go. The teacher at the seminar said that was the best part, being able to go to the mountains or the beach or outer space as easily as thinking it. But I just find myself in this city full of strange people and creatures and...
Do you sleep with any of these strange people?
No, it's not like that.
What good's having control of your dreams if you can't wish yourself into an erotic dream? Seems like that would be the best part.
I want to go back to sleep. I want to try again.
You don't have to ask my permission. I was sleeping just fine until you sat up and started yelling. Doesn't sound like lucid dreaming is doing you much good. You're still having nightmares.
The nightmares are different now. I'm in control.
But she just turned over and pulled the sheet up to her neck.
He's the fat man,
Hal Law said, speaking silently into me, able to share thoughts as easily as we shared senses.
He goes to the axe in his dreams, and he kills us for pleasure. That's why the questing beast couldn't hold the killer. Why he melted away. Because he has no substance beyond the borders of the axe.
Madness, I said. Though Hal Law's intuitive leaps had proven right more often than my resultant skepticism.
No, I think I figured it. The Regent has consulted with many oniromancers, lucid dreamers, and archetype hunters over the years. I know because I was sent to kidnap and press gang many of them into civil service. I never knew why he wanted them before. I think that, with the Regent's help, the Royal Orphans have constructed a machine to steal dreams. A dream engine that grabs mental figments and makes them real. But they locked onto this madman's dream, and now his dream self will keep coming and killing until this world spirals too far from the axe for the engine to reach, which could take years.
A dream engine, I repeated. The activity of such a machine might explain the plague of nightmares in the city center.
I doubt the Regent would worry over much about properly shielding any strange radiations. This is a new low for him. It's not enough that he grows rich through the orphan's thefts. Now he wants to pillage our dreams, too.
The man lay on his back, staring at the ceiling. Despite his words, he did not seem eager to sleep again. If Halal was right, the man had just been chased out of his fantasy of infinite strength by the monstrous questing beast, which would be enough to give any dreamer pause. If you're right, we have to kill him, I said.
Or not,
Halal said. Halal severed our connection, swirling my motes, and so it took me a moment to realize Z was transforming into the questing beast again. And I knew why. To jump away from this world, to another plane, adjacent to this one, but not necessarily adjacent to the axe. A few dimensional leaps, a little time, and Halal would be far enough beyond the axe's influence, beyond the grasp of even the greatest snatch engines. But I still had a chance, this brief moment between transformations, to strike, and I did. I performed the one act that Halal could not resist, the power I was given permission to use only in circumstances as extreme as these. I took possession of Halal's body. Halal fought, and I batted Zer efforts aside, then simply reveled in having a body. Especially a body as sensitive as the questing beasts, seeing into higher dimensions, seeing colors that only exist between worlds. I wanted to fly through suns, roll across jagged stones, immerse myself in lava, feel this forever. Halal was laughing at me, a tinny internal sound. Shush it, I said, not speaking aloud. I didn't even know if this body had vocal cords. You didn't escape. You failed. We're going to kill this man and then return to the axe.
Go on, then,
Halal said.
Best of luck.
I attempted to take a step forward, and everything blurred. My head rang with odd chimes, and bizarre scents assailed me. I had never been in a body so sensitive to smell. Each scent was like a line attached to me, tugging me in one direction or another. I paused, and the chaos of sensory input lessened. I took another step toward the dream killer's window, and this time a whole new set of sensations struck me, making me fall to the ground. This form will not do, I said.
Why not? Because you have no finesse, Wisp? Because you can control gross motor functions, but the intricacies are lost to you? In the questing beast's form, even the most trivial movement is intricate. Then why not take another form? A simpler one?
I felt rage. Glandular rage. Pumping up from somewhere in this body. A biological response to a mental state. I never get used to that. The feedback loop of mind and body that the corporeal undergo constantly. And I tried to dismiss its effects. I couldn't shift into another form. That was far too intricate a task for my understanding of how to control a body. If Halal had been in a human form, I could have broken into the man's house, stabbed him with a knife, and walked out again. Such simple physical manipulation was within my powers. But as the questing beast... We have reached an impasse, I said.
And what do you propose?
Kill this man, and I will not report your attempt to escape.
Oh, please, don't report me. What will they do? Sentence me to another lifetime of servitude?
Just kill him. That's why we came.
I came to kill an invulnerable fat man with golden weapons, Wisp. Not a mentally disturbed man in his bed.
They are the same.
They are not the same. This man is mad, but he is not the killer. He simply dreams of killing.
But his dreams are evil.
You would hold us responsible for our dreams now? If so, I am a regicide 1,000 times over, for in my dreams, I rip the regent and his orphans to wet bits every night. The regent is the guilty party in this. He has made a machine that steals dreams, and he brought the killer to our city.
What do you recommend?
Fixing this problem at the source, which is what I was trying to do when you so rudely possessed me.
You were trying to escape, I said.
No, Wisp. I was trying to return to Nexington on Axis. Sorry I didn't consult you. My understanding was that you're an observer, here to lend me support.
I am here to make sure you serve your duty, I replied, wondering if C was telling the truth.
I will. But my duty is not to the Regent. I serve the welfare of Nexington on Axis. Come, Wisp, and I'll show you. I do have a sense of responsibility, such a strong one, in fact, that I won't kill an innocent madman for the Regent's crimes.
I gave up control of Howlaw's body, and with more shifting, we returned to the axe. We appeared in the Regent's private chambers, which should have been impossible, as there were safeguards against teleportation there. The Regent sat in a wingback chair, holding a ledger in his lap, and he raised his eyebrows when we appeared. Howlaw shifted to female human form, only swaying a bit on their feet in the aftermath of being the beast.
Huh,
Z said.
I wondered if that would work. It said nothing can stop a questing beast from coming and going as it pleases.
The Regent said.
I trust you solved our problem and disposed of the fat man. I'll see you get something extra in your next pay allotment. Now go away. I'm busy.
He looked back down at his ledger. Howlaw cleared his throat.
Regent, I require your assistance in the fulfillment of my duties.
The Regent looked up.
You didn't kill the fat man?
My investigation is ongoing. I need to see the new snatch engine, the one that steals dreams. And I may have some questions regarding its operations.
The Regent set his ledger aside and stared at Howlaw for a long moment.
Well,
he said,
you are not famed for your powers of deduction, Howlamore, but for your powers of destruction. I had not expected you to make inquiries, and I did not ask you to. You are dismissed from this case. I will assign someone else to deal with the fat man.
Respectfully, sir, you may not interfere with any legitimate inquiries I care to make in an ongoing investigation. My contract prohibits such interference. Again, please have me escorted to the new snatch engine and provide someone knowledgeable to answer any questions I might have. Or do you believe this line of inquiry is without cause? If so, I would be happy to bring any evidence before the magisters.
Howlaw smiled. I was in awe at Sir Audacity. To confront the Regent this way? And Z had no evidence, just intuition and inference. If the Regent called the bluff? But no, he didn't want any evidence Howlaw might possess brought before the magisters and, indirectly, the citizens of the Axe.
I am the Regent, Moore. You take orders from me.
Indeed, but my contract states that I serve the city and not the ruler. You may not lawfully inhibit me. Break my contract if you like, and I'll not trouble you again. Otherwise, you are obliged to cooperate.
I could have you executed for treason.
Howlaw bowed.
You are welcome to try, sir.
Skinshifters could be executed, but it was difficult, since a long-lived member of the species would have forms resistant to most obvious methods of execution.
But if you choose not to execute me or break my contract, then I must ask, for the third time, that you take me to the dream engine and provide—
Yes,
the Regent snapped.
Fine.
I was astonished. how Law's bluff had succeeded. Z was too valuable for the regent to dismiss from duty or kill, and his own laws prevented any other action. The regent couldn't simply disregard these laws, for they were the source of his power. Without his laws, there would be no city of Nexington on Axis, just a giant junk heap full of things snatched at random by the orphans, indiscriminate slaves to their magpie impulses.
But I am about to show you a state secret.
That's fine. My contract gives me any necessary clearances to fulfill my duties.
I know what your contract says, Moore. I wrote it myself, so you would be forced to serve the city in perpetuity, even in the event of my death. Now shut up about it. I'm taking you where you want to go. If you speak a word about this device to anyone, you will be executed for treason. We have methods designed for your kind. There's a special chamber in one of the basements for disposing of skin shifter.
I serve the state,
Howlaw said.
I will not betray it.
I wondered what kind of execution chamber the regent had that could hold a questing beast, since the safeguards on his private chambers had been insufficient to keep the beast out. I didn't think the regent realized what kind of power he was giving Howlaw by letting Zim drink the questing beast's blood. We set off down the shifting opalescent corridors of the palace, and the walls groaned around us as they moved.
You think the killer is a dream being, snatched here by the experimental engine?
The regent said as we walked.
I'll submit my report when my investigation is complete, along with any recommendations for how to rectify the problem.
The regent scowled, but kept walking. Finally, we reached a door of black iron. The stone around it was discolored and cracked. The substance of the palace apparently had an allergy to iron, but the heavy metal had certain shielding properties that made its use necessary on occasion. The regent knocked, a complex rhythm, his unbreakable adamant signet ring clanging against the metal with each rap. The door swung open silently, and the regent ushered us into the dimly lit place beyond.
This is the dream engine,
the regent said.
Not what you expected, I wager.
No,
Ella murmured.
It's not.
Unlike the snatch engines, there were no gears here. No oiled pistons, no sparking ladders of electricity, no bell-shaped domes of glass, no miles of copper pipes for coolant. There was only a throbbing organic mass in a web of wires, a red and green slick thing, with no visible eyes or limbs, though it did have vestigial wings, prismatic like a dragonfly's, which drooped to the floor. A royal orphan, pinned in a web of wires. Howlaw crossed her arms.
So it's psychic, then?
The regent smiled.
In a way, it sees dreams. More importantly, it covets dreams. And what the royal orphans covet, they get. Much of the process of governing Nexington on Axis is making sure the orphans want things the city needs. They don't care what happens to the things they snatch. They simply live for the process of snatching. This one is no different, except for the sorts of things it snatches.
You haven't been successful making this one want things the city needs, since it pulled a madman's murderous dream to this world.
You're certain of that?
The regent said. Howlaw just nodded. And the regent sighed.
I'll have to spend some time tuning the process. It's still experimental. I trust you found and killed the dreamer to prevent another incident?
I did not. If I had known for certain about the existence of this dream engine, I would have tried. But I only had suspicions. When I grabbed the fat man, I was carried to another world, surrounded by houses filled with sleeping humans, with no sign of the fat man anywhere. That's when I began to suspect that I'd grabbed a dream figment. I remembered your studies with various experts on dreaming, platonic ideals, the collective unconscious, things of that nature.
You have quite a memory,
the regent said.
I drank the blood of an elephant once.
I almost laughed.
Since I wasn't sure the killer was a dream thing, I came back here to inquire further.
We should talk in the hall,
the regent said abruptly.
Vibrations disturb the engine.
Indeed, the vestigial wings were flickering, weakly, and we left the room. Once in the hall, the regent said.
How do you intend to proceed?
When the killer appears again, I'll grab him, and when he sweeps me back to the human world with him again, well, I think it's safe to assume that the dangerous dreamer will be somewhere in the general vicinity of the place where I land. I'll simply kill everyone within a mile or so. It will take time, but I have some forms that are suited to the task.
I was stunned. I knew how Law was lying. We knew very well who the dreamer was, and how Law had shown no inclination to kill him. So what was Z planning?
Very good,
the regent said.
But if you mention a word about the contents of that room, I'll have you flayed into your component atoms. Understood?
The authorities appreciate your cooperation,
how Law said. The regent sniffed and walked away.
Come, Wisp. Back to our eternal vigilance.
Back to the bar, you mean?
Just so.
How Law grimaced, touching Zer's stomach.
Oh, crap. I've got a pain in my gut.
Are you all right?
Probably something I ate in another form that doesn't agree with this one. I'll be all right.
How Law shivered, stretched, and became the questing beast. We traveled. I tried to get some sense out of Howlaw at the bar before Zeev drank too many red bulldozers, primal screams, and gravity wells to maintain a coherent conversation. I slipped a tendril into Zer's mind and said, "What is your plan?"
"Assume what I told the regent is true,"
Howlaw said, smiling at the human bartender, who looked appreciatively at Howlaw's human breasts as she mixed drinks.
"If things work out, it won't matter. But if things go badly, you'll need all the plausible deniability you can get. No reason for you to go down with me if I fail. This way you can honestly claim ignorance of my plans."
"You want to protect me from getting in trouble with the regent?" I said, almost touched. Z laughed aloud and gulped a fizzing reddish concoction.
No, Wisp. But on the off chance that they do imprison me instead of putting me to death, I don't want to be stuck in a cell with you forever."
After that, Z wouldn't talk to me at all, but had fun as only Howlaw, on the eve of potential death, can. Z vomited more often than usual, though. A day passed, and Howlaw was sober and bored at home, playing five-deck solitaire, while I made desultory suggestions before the fat man reappeared. The singing gem keened at midday. Howlaw cocked Zer's head, taking information from the gem. Z became the questing beast, and we were away. This time we landed in the city center. The fat man sat on the obsidian steps of the courthouse of lesser infractions, face turned up to the sun, smiling up at the light. He held a golden scythe across his knees, and blood and bodies lay strewn all over the steps around him, many wearing the star-patterned robes of magisters. Howlaw did not hesitate, but traveled again, this time appearing directly in front of the fat man and lashing out with barely visible hooked appendages to grasp the killer. Then Howlaw traveled again. We reappeared in the racing precinct, startling the spectators and scattering the thoroughbred chimeras. The fat man struggled in the hoof-churned mud, his weapon gone. I had barely overcome my disorientation before Howlaw traveled again. I knew it was Howlaw controlling the movement, for the sensation was quite different from the swirling transcendence that came when the fat man dragged us to that other world. This time, we appeared in another populated area, the vaulted gray halls of the Chapel of Blessed Increase in the monastic quarter. We flickered again, Howlaw and the fat man still locked in struggle, and flashed briefly through another dozen places around the city, all filled with startled citizens. In the Adder's Pit, the Ladder to the Stars, the Moss Forest, the Monster Farm, the Glass Park, the Burning Island. We even passed through the Regent's inner chamber, briefly, though he was not there. And through other rooms in the palace, courtrooms, dungeons, and chambers of government. There was a fair amount of incidental damage in many of these instances, as the fat man rolled around, kicked and thrashed. Then, we appeared in the Dream Engine's chamber, and everything in my full circle visual field wobbled and ran, either as an after effect of all that spatial violation, or because bringing a dream into such proximity with the Dream Engine set up unstable resonances. Howlaw and the Fat Man thrashed right into the pulsing Royal Orphan in its tangle of wires. The Orphan's wings fluttered as it broke free from the mountings, and the ovoid body fell to the floor with a sick liquid sound, like a piece of rotten fruit dropping onto pavement. The Fat Man broke free of Howlaw, though that wasn't possible, so Howlaw must have let him go. He attacked Howlaw, who flickered and reappeared on the far side of the weakly pulsing Royal Orphan. The Fat Man roared and strode forward, a new weapon suddenly in his hand, a 6-foot pole arm covered in barbs and hooks. He tread on the Royal Orphan, which popped and deflated, a wet, ripe odor filling the room. The Fat Man swung at the unmoving Howlaw, but the weapon disappeared in mid-arc. The Fat Man stumbled, falling to one knee, then moaned and came apart. It was like seeing a shadow sculpture dissolve at the wave of an artist's hand, his substance darkening, becoming transparent, and finally melting away. Howlaw became human, fell to Zer's knees, and shivered.
Oh, feel sick,
Z said, grimacing. I was terrified. The Regent might kill us for this. We'd stopped the Fat Man, yes, but at the cost of a Royal Orphan's life. We have to go, Howlaw, I said. Become the questing beast. I won't try to stop you. Let's flee across the worlds. We have to get away. But Howlaw did not hear, for Z was vomiting now, violently, her whole body heaving. A red and milky white and translucent syrupy stuff coming from Zer's mouth, mingling with the ichor from the dead orphan on the floor. The door opened. The Regent and 2 Nagalinda guards entered.
No!
The Regent cried.
No, no, no!
The guards seized Howlaw, who was still vomiting, and dragged Zim away. I floated along, inexorably behind. The Regent stayed, kneeling by the dead orphan, gently touching its unmoving rainbow wings.
Feeling better, traitor?
The Regent said. Howlaw sat, pale and still unwell, on a hard wooden bench before the Regent's desk.
A bit.
The Regent smiled.
You didn't think I'd let you be the questing beast forever, did you? I couldn't risk your escape. Wisp is one line of defense against that, but I felt another was needed, so I laced the blood with poison and bound their substances together. When the poison activated, your body expelled it, along with all the questing beast's genetic material. You've lost the power to take that form.
I've never vomited up an entire shape before,
Howlaw said.
It was an unpleasant experience.
The first of many for a traitor like you.
Regent, I said, as Howlaw's witness, I must inform you that you are incorrect. Howlaw did not mean to harm the orphan. The Fat Man appeared and disappeared, and Howlaw and I were simply carried along with him. Surely there are others who can attest to that, testify that we appeared all over the city, fighting? Howlaw held on, hoping the Fat Man would fade and we would be taken to the world of the Dreamer. But before that could happen, well, the Dream Engine was damaged.
The orphan was killed. You expect me to believe that, by coincidence, the last place Howlaw and the killer appeared was in that room?
We could hardly appear anywhere after that, Regent, since the Dream Engine was destroyed, dissolving the Fat Man in the process. I spoke respectfully. Had that not happened, I cannot tell you where the Fat Man might have traveled next.
He was a lucid dreamer,
Howlaw said.
He'd learned to move around at will. He was trying to shake me off, bouncing all over the city.
The Regent stared at Howlaw.
That orphan was the result of decades of research, cloning, crossbreeding, the pinnacle of the bloodline. With a bit of practice, it would have been the most powerful of the orphans, and this city would have flourished as never before. We would have entered an age of dreams.
It is a great loss, Regent, and we certainly deserve no honor or glory for our work. I failed to kill the dreamer. He killed himself, but I did not kill the orphan either. The fat man tread upon it.
Wisp,
the Regent said,
you affirm, on your honor as a witness, that this is true?
My honor as a witness. My honor demanded that I respect Howlaw's elegant solution, which had saved the city further murder and also destroyed the Regent's wicked dream engine. I think the Regent misunderstood the oath he requested. Yes, I said.
Get out of here, both of you. There will be no bonus pay for this farce. No pay at all, in fact, until I decide to reinstate you to active duty.
As you say, Regent, Howlaw and I said together and took our leave.
You lied for me, Wisp.
Howlaw said that night, reclining on a heap of soft furs and coarse fabrics. I provided an interpretation that fit the objectively available facts, I said.
You knew I was the one dragging the killer around the city, not vice versa.
So it seemed to me subjectively, but if the Regent chose to access my memory and see things as I had seen them, there would be no such subjectivity, so it hardly seemed relevant to the discussion.
I owe you one, Wisp,
Howlaw said. I did what I thought best. We are partners.
No, you misunderstand. I owe you one, and I want you to take it. Right now.
Howlaw held out her hand. After a moment, I understood. I drifted down to Howlaw's body, and into it, taking over her body. Howlaw did not resist, and the sensation was utterly different from the other times I had taken possession, when most of my attention went to fighting for control. I sank back in the furs and fabrics, shivering in ecstasy at the sensations on Zer, on my skin.
The body is yours for the night,
Howlaw said, in my, our mind.
Do with it what you will.
Thank you.
You had the right of it. We are partners, finally, and for the first time, partners.
I buried myself in furs and reveled in the tactile experience until the exquisite, never-before-experienced sensation of drowsiness overtook me. I fell asleep in that body, and in sleep, I dreamed my own dreams, the first dreams of my life. They were beautiful and lush and could not be stolen.
Quite the fun journey, wasn't it? Let's review the cast of characters real quick. We have Renee Chambliss as Wisp, Rish Outfield as the Regent, Marshall Latham, that's me, as Howlaw, Brian Lincoln as not only the Fat Man, but also the man who becomes the Fat Man in his dreams. And we also added in Abigail Hilton as the Dreamer's wife. You know, for me, there is so much to like about this story. First of all, just the world building. We learn quite a bit about Nexington-on-Axis in a short amount of time. Of course, there is also more to discover, and that's the fun of it. But you have the snatch engines and these mysterious orphans, and they're very unique, very fascinating. And then we have the main characters, a shapeshifter and a bodiless wisp who can see everything and inhabit bodies. Tim makes really great use of the buddy movie factor with Hellaw and Wisp. You know, they fight against one another, and they quarrel, but ultimately they bond together in the end. I guess in this story, in more ways than one. I also like the Sherlock Holmes thing they have going, where Wisp plays Watson to Howlaw's Holmes, observing the events and being somewhat dumbstruck as Howlaw foils the plans of the Regent and unveils the mystery. Good, good stuff. I also think the Regent makes a great villain. He has power and privilege, and is pretty nasty in the way he treats our heroes. And how cool is the Fat Man coming to wreak havoc and death wherever he appears? Just all these things, they come together for a great story. And you might be able to tell that I like it. But what did you think? Do you want to share your thoughts on this story? Well, then let me take this opportunity to announce the new Journey Into forums. I took some time over the holiday to set them up, and I have set up several different categories, the foremost being a topic for each of the journeys we have taken so far, and one side trip. Please feel free to go to the forums, register, and join in on the discussion. I would love to hear from you and get some feedback. Just go to journeyinto, all one word, .freeforums.org. It'll be fun. Come on over. I also invite you to go to the main website at journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com and check out the great artwork for this episode drawn by Howard Lyon. He originally drew this art when Dream Engine appeared in Intergalactic Medicine Show, and he was gracious enough to let me reuse it here. And while you're on the website, you can also click on any of the donate options to throw some change our way to help us pay the authors for their stories. I'd love to pay more for the larger stories like Dream Engine, but also pay for the flash fiction we run as well. I always feel bad when I ask an author to run a story, but then say I can't pay for it, or only offer a token payment. I'm so grateful for the many authors who are featured here and who have let me run their stories. Alright kids, that's all for me for now. Journey on, and don't take any wooden nickels. We'll journey together again soon. The Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Which is all to say, please share it, but don't change it or sell it. The theme music for this podcast is provided by Man in Space.
That's my roar.